in association with Newsarama. Welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Well, good news. Part three of the Bendis tapes is here. That's right, more of our conversation with Brian Michael Bendis. And this is Comic-Con week, and so there are always travelers around the Bendis household as Comic-Con gets closer. I don't know if that's true or not, but in this case it was this week. And there's a surprise guest that pops on the show. I think you're going to enjoy it. A freewheeling conversation and more questions from Brian's Jinx World message board answered here on the Bendis tapes right here on Word Balloon. We can actually start because you said you've got announcements.
All right. First of all...
It sounds like he's got a grievance list. All right, kids, here we go.
All right, listen, yeah, I got a shit list here. Now, I just wanted to say that since last we talked, the Spider-Woman trailer is online. I know people on the board have seen it, but it came out awesome. It's cool, and you should check it out at Cup of Joe or at Marvel.com, or check my Twitter feed and link it. It's awesome, and spread it around, because this is a major endeavor by Marvel Comics, and a very important one. So I'm really excited about that. Hold on 1 second. Lucky! Oh, he's on crack today. And...
yes?
And I have a maniac dog in this house
that
I may have to put in a cage because he's losing his mind.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I cage in my house. I mean, not just in general. Cage.
Oh, of course.
Let's see. Okay, powers. A lot of people online and on Twitter keep asking me, so I want to, like, make the announcement, like, clear. Powers is launching a brand-new number one in November.
Right.
Through Icon Marvel. It is celebrating our 10th anniversary. It's a brand-new chapter. If you were thinking about getting the Powers, hop on board. If you were all in Powers already, here it comes. We're shipping monthly for many months in a row. We already have many issues done in the can, as they say. And not only will, in November, will... the Powers number one be shipping, but so will the Powers Encyclopedia and the third volume of the hardcovers. And there will be our resolicitation of all the hardcovers and trades coming out through Icon in November. So it'll be in the next catalog, and you won't be able to miss it. But I say that because I'm getting a lot of people asking me. There seems to be some, they're not sure what's going on with all the art that's being promoted. And if you want to see a sneak preview of the art for Powers number one, hit my board. It's called Powers the Pack, and Oming has been posting tons of stuff.
Very cool.
Yeah. Woohoo! I'm so excited.
Well,
hey.
And
I have a question.
Please.
I have a question I already know the answer to.
Go ahead.
John, did you meet Dave McKeon tonight?
Yes, I did. Actually, this weekend. Dave was in town in Chicago for a signing, and he has some new art that he's done, paintings that are based on early 1900s silent horror films. Really cool stuff based on F.W. Murnau's Faust and a Georges Méliès film. That's the guy who made the original From the Earth to the Moon, where, like, the bullet hits the moon in the eye.
Yeah, it really annoys me when an artist of that caliber just kowtows to the most populist thing.
Exactly.
Really,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, he turned down
What's he going to do next, Transformers?
I was going to say, he turned down that Paris Hilton portrait opportunity to make
exactly.
these fine paintings. Yeah. And he had a bunch of his short films with him as well. And it was really cool because I had never really seen a lot of his short films. I've seen Mirror Mask, but it was cool how his art style is reflected in a lot of his short films as well. So
did you get to lock him down for some word balloonage?
Why, yes, I did, Brian Bendis. A fine 10-minute interview.
Like an infomercial.
And I appreciate that. It's actually the episode that precedes part three of the Bendis tapes.
And how do you get your hair so shiny?
Beer on tap. Wasn't that the shampoo that had beer in it?
There you go.
Well, because I'm stuck in the 70s, so I figured I should do an old product.
You really are stuck in the 70s. That was hilarious.
Prel. I use Prel. Video of the Dave McKeon interview is at wordballoon.com and at YouTube, our video page, where we have a bunch of other video interviews as well. And the audio, like I said, is on the RSS feed. It's the episode before the Bendis tape. If you subscribe, you've already got it. If you don't, good opportunity to go and check out the RSS feed. Plenty of stuff. There you go. Wow, good endorsement time, man. Thank you.
All right, talk to you later.
Exactly. Hey, that'll do it for part three of the Bendis tapes, because that took 3 hours, didn't it? Everyone's like, shut up and get to it. Who cares? Let's see. Now I had it. Where the fuck is it now? They took down the sticky for the questions, so then I have to search.
Yeah, hey, listen, moderators, don't unsticky my stickies. I'll sticky you. You get it? You hear me, Ben Simpson? Denny, you think your living room, man. Calm down. He's always worried how neat it looks. It's okay.
We're back. It's question number 29, folks, if you're keeping score at home. And it's Sergeant Pepper 2789.
Again, I'm not sure he's actually a sergeant, but okay.
His location is Strawberry Field.
Yeah.
Bendis, how has your experience working as a journalist impacted your career in comics? Familiar territory, but go ahead.
Well, it did. I think as life goes on, I find that it had a great influence, almost as much as an influence as my time at McDonald's did. And by that I mean, I of all the jobs I've had and all the jobs that there are in the world, I think that if I didn't end up being a comic book dude, I probably would have tried to make my living in journalism and been found to be a non-spelling, horrible, grammatically unable to write a full sentence failure that I am, but only in comics is that awarded and given prizes to. So it did. You know what? I got to see the world. I got to see what it is to form a story based on actual facts. And it was a great time for me because I was also working on the Torso graphic novel, so I had access to things that other people did not have access to. But when I say journalist, let's make it clear, I was not a field reporter. I was not Jimmy Olsen. I was a cartoonist for the Plain Dealer, and I did have this awesome forum in which to express myself and my silliness, some of which was reprinted in the very underrated Total Sellout collection from Image Comics. And
honestly, Brian, for those who haven't seen it, was it editorial stuff or was it just local humor stuff?
It was cool. I'd met my editor at the Plain Dealer. Plain Dealer is the paper in Cleveland, and I, in my nonstop hustle of getting work anywhere I could that was writing and drawing, I was hustling them left and right for them to hire me to do work, illustration, what have you, and I finally had wore this woman down, and she was an excellent editor of the Sunday Magazine. I had wore her down, and she gave me an assignment to do an 8-page story about Rolling Stone Magazine and Jan Winter and how much damage he was doing to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame at the time, or the perception of it. And it was a cover story, and I got to do it, and I literally had to do the whole thing in 2 days, and I did it. And I stayed up all night, literally for 48 hours, and did these giant boards, and I came in, and I did it, and I rocked it. And she rewarded me. She said, come back in. We're going to revamp the Sunday Magazine. If I gave you a page of the Sunday Magazine, what would you do? Because if I see another brownie recipe, I'm going to go insane. And so she was just at this place where she was sick of the mediocre fare that most Sunday magazines and newspapers
Absolutely.
Are, old women
parade.
It was either parades coming or what would you do? And I pitched this wildly overly ambitious desire to have it be a different kind of cartoon every week. Like sometimes it would be editorial cartoons, sometimes it'd be Spice of Life or autobiographical or just silly. Just in different styles artistically, anything I could think of. And it would take a couple months for people to realize, oh, there's no format to this. It's going to be some crazy thing. Sometimes it'd be a serious story about Cleveland. Sometimes it'd be a national thing. Sometimes it'd be just about me and my wife. And, I got to do it for about 2 years, which was, and I found out early that someone had tried to get me fired about every week.
Wow.
That I from the first cartoon on, had been in a great deal of trouble. I did a handful of cartoons. I tried to get, a couple months ahead, much like I do now, and I had handed in, 10 cartoons, and then I went on vacation with my wife, and they decided to run the first one, which is a cartoon I did of the mayor, on a bicycle, because I'm a bike rider, and I was riding this bike path that the mayor had built that cost $1 million that took over the whole waterfront, the whole, the coast of Lake Erie.
Sure.
And it got me literally from downtown to my house, and I was the only person who ever was on this bike path. it was out of the way, it was through a bad neighborhood, but it was a great bike path, the best I've ever been on in my life, right? And someone had told me, the mayor did it because it literally goes from his front door to the courthouse. And I go, oh, that's hilarious. So I literally drew him on a Pee Wee Herman bicycle, traveling through this bad neighborhood, happy as a clam, and you see the city burning in the background, which is not far off from what actually happened.
Or Lake Erie burning at times.
And so I had, like, there's a bunnies with guns hiding in the bushes ready to jump people, and like squirrels with knives. And it was, you know, it was every joke you can think of. And then I capped it with the fact that our mayor had been married numerous times. And there had been a lot of reports of spousal abuse. Now, I don't remember if
wow.
it was true or not, or if it happened, but in my head that meant that it was free game. So I literally had him, like, in a sleeveless shirt with the tattoos of his wife's names crossed out, except for the latest one. Like, you know, so I was just bam, 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 bam. So this is the first one that goes. And it's supposedly it's like an election year.
Okay.
So this cartoon hits the stands. The mayor calls a press conference and blasts me. All I'm out of town.
Did he name you?
We never talked about this on the Warblin?
I don't remember this story.
Okay.
No. And did he name you? Did he say Brian Ben?
Oh, he's a plane dealer. They at first they endorse me, and then they go out of their way to sabotage my character and blah 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 blah. And what happened was he was running either unopposed or against, like, he didn't have much to campaign with.
Okay.
So he was incumbent, and supposedly the way it was explained to me, he was just looking for press, right?
Sure.
So he launched, and then I literally was getting calls on the road. I didn't even have a cell phone at the time. I was getting calls on the road, hey, call in, and she goes, hey, listen, my editor said you better get in here. And I'm like, what happened? And so I was being called a racist because he was an African-American mayor.
Wow.
He's a racist, so you can't draw an African-American at all without it being perceived as
sure,
racist.
Sure, sure.
I'm like, and they go, why does this bunny have him? Like people were yelling about it. And then the news picked it up. It was on 6 o'clock news, and it went on for days.
Plain dealer cartoonist Brian Michael Bendis.
No, it was like the ink with the stink at 11. Swear to God, and they would show the cartoon at like an angle.
You've definitely never told this
story. And I remember this as I was having like so came home Monday. I went right into the plain dealer, and at the time I was like all Mr. Leather Jacket all the time with my newly shaved head, they were trying to decide what to do about me, and I go, why don't I just go over there? And there was like press outside my house, right? I go, why don't I just go talk to them? And I'll say, I'm not a racist. I mean, look at me. I'm not a racist. I'm a little Jewish boy. I'm a, you know what I mean? They're like, you're going to come out there with your skinhead and your leather jacket and say, you know.
Yeah.
He goes, no, you're not going to say anything to anybody. And, like, the morning show, the local zoo was calling me. And,
hey, Brian Michael Bendis, how's it feel? Give it to the bear, man.
Yeah. And I'm a Howard Stern guy, and I hung up. No, bababooey, bababooey.
Exactly.
No, so it was really weird, and they told me, don't talk to anybody, stay out of it, let it blow over. So Tuesday comes. I remember I sat down with a Mr. Hero sandwich in my studio. My wife is at school. I turn on news radio because I love news radio. I'm going to relax. I turn it on, and literally, just before the show comes on, they give you the little teaser for the 11 o'clock news. They go, coming up at 11, the ink with the stink. And I'm like, with my mouth hanging open, I'm like with the sandwich almost at my mouth, like, I cannot believe I just saw that, right?
Spit take, absolutely.
Yeah, and my mom calling, going, what did you do? Like, you know. So this went on and on, and thank God the Indians won the pennant that night, and the story went away.
That's outstanding.
Literally, the Indians won that night, like it never happened.
Wow, just like Mark Sanford and Michael Jackson.
Like Mark Sanford, exactly. So, except the difference is I didn't then run out to the press and go, wait, I have black jokes.
Yeah. I'd like to explain my love for this Argentinian woman, please. Yeah,
so,
wow, man.
Anyway,
hilarious.
So that went out. So I didn't get fired. She really backed me up, and there's quite a few times where I would do or say something that would get me in trouble. I had to meet with the Anti-Defamation League for what was perceived to be anti-Semitic joke. I made a joke about, it was a cartoon about me and my wife's honeymoon, where I said we had the traditional Jewish honeymoon. We sat on the bed and counted our money, and I thought because I'm wearing a yarmulke in the cartoon, I thought, you know, Jews are allowed to make Jews jokes.
Absolutely, yes.
Rule.
Yes.
So
Mel Brooks has lived by that for 80 years. Go right ahead.
I sit down, they go, and then the next Tuesday, come on in, the Anti-Defamation League wants to yell at you. I go, but I'm Jewish. They go, you have to come in.
Awesome.
So I come in, he sits me down, and I go, listen, I went to the Hebrew Academy in Cleveland. I am bar mitzvahed. I am circumcised.
You dropped your
My
pants.
My father-in-law is a rabbi. I don't know what the hell I got to do. I thought that's a rule. And the guy goes, yeah, just don't do it again. Like, I'm sorry. So a lot, that was things I knew about. I found out later things I didn't even know about. There was one, like, sometimes I would use swear words, but I do the cartoon swear words.
Sure.
J. Jonah Jameson.
Yes, absolutely.
A wing-ding swear word.
Okay,
you know?
So, like, they didn't even spell anything. It'd be a lightning bolt and the pound sign and the exclamation point.
And a man would rip out the cartoon, circle it, write, you goddamn potty mouth, and mail it back to the paper.
Hilarious.
All right, but not even with the irony of you just swore at me and I didn't swear at you. You know.
Yes, exactly.
But this is the long answer to what I learned is, no matter what you write in public, half the people reading it will be vehemently in disagreement with whatever you said, especially if it's about sex or politics or religion. And no matter what you write, someone's going to get upset. And that is the most freeing thing that ever happened in my life. So when I came into Marvel with this very new knowledge, I was able to then, you know, take that when people were, you know, bashing me for whatever. I'd be like, yeah, that's what happens. You wrote something, and someone's going to be mad. The end.
Now that's a good tangent. Attaboy. All
there
right. See, now
you know,
he's back, kids.
Let me pause it, or maybe I'll take you with me because my freaking dog's going insane.
Do you want to pause?
Well, let's see if I make too much noise while I'm doing this. I don't know how entertaining this might be.
Buster, shut up!
Yes. No, this is Short Round Bendis, our new dog.
Good name.
Short Round. My daughter named her Short Round. It's the proudest moment of my entire...
Continues to be the coolest five-year-old in the class.
Yeah, she goes... First, she was going to name it Indiana Jones, decided it was too, you know, too silly, and then said Short Round. So I was very proud. I won't lie to you.
Atta girl. Way to go, Olivia.
All right.
Bendis, do you feel that comics have better adapted to the changes brought about the Internet than other print media? And, you know, we started on this tangent, but then we got off subject. So that's why I ask it again.
I think so. I do. I think what it did was it took something that was very personal, you know, very intimate. You know, a lot of people would be the only comic book fan in their peer group. And now there's a community, like a really damn big community.
Absolutely.
And so that's a big thing. And the comics, I don't think they've changed. I don't think many successful comics are being written specifically, you know, for the Internet community or to answer the Internet community. And I know that sometimes that some of my peers have tried to do that and failed desperately. But as far as what I think it's A, brought the community together. I think it's in a sense made nerd cool.
Yeah, I know.
And that's amazing. I've said before on this very podcast, for me, I think I told you, Bill Sienkiewicz told me he had no idea anybody liked him because there was no way to know.
Right.
He would draw new. I'm sitting at home reading New Mutants going, Jesus Christ, this is the best thing I've ever seen in my life. He's at home going, I hope anyone likes it. I mean, he'd get a couple letters. You know, but he doesn't find out for a decade that he was causing, like, you know, a whole generation of people to lose their shit.
Absolutely.
You know, so, and Howard Chaykin's told me the same thing. And now, you know, my peer group, we get instant feedback, instant, you know, for better or for worse. We get to hear right away, yay or nay. So it's, I think that's good. I think it keeps a lot of people more honest than they would. And I think almost to the point where we want to yell out sometimes to people online going, you don't know, lucky you got it, you sons of bitches, you know.
Absolutely. Well, you know, and from the other standpoint, Jeff Parker and I were talking about how
just over here for dinner tonight.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yes.
One of my favorite people. He made a very good point about, hey, wouldn't it be great, you know, wouldn't it have been great to have websites and podcasts and things back in the 70s and 80s to hear as they were happening, Brian Boland talking about Camelot 3000 and, you know, you name it, any project from Will Eisner going on and about coming back with a contract with God and stuff. And, you know,
Well, I wrote in the poorly received humor issue of What If that I did with Nolfell Gallery.
Oh, I remember that. The
Tom Brevoort wrote "What If the Internet Existed in the 60s, 70s, and 80s," and I think we were right on the money.
I remember that. Absolutely. Well, yeah, there's always snarkiness. Although, again, we had editors. We had the Marty Pascals and the Bob Rozakis's, and forgive me, I'm not coming up with any Marvel associate editors of the 70s that were able to sift through the mailbag, and you'd only read, you know, when are we going to see Red Kryptonite again?
Well, in the most ill-fitted attempt to shoehorn my special guest into the conversation,
please,
I'm going to introduce to you a man who actually his whole life changed because of the Internet. Not only did he come up with a fake name for himself that became his actual name, but he met his wife on the Internet.
No way.
Yes, and he's sitting in my basement here in the David Mack chair, and here he is. I'm putting him online here. Here you go.
Hi, John Tundras. It's Matt Fraction.
Oh, I thought it was going to be Drunk Orson Welles, but hey, Matt, how are you, man?
I love the Internet. I'm available. So many pornography films I've downloaded for free off of the Internet.
And that's how the Internet changed Matt Fraction.
Well, good to hear from you, Matt, and enjoyed recent podcast panels that we heard from Heroes Con. I thought that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks.
Pugnacious.
Yeah,
Pugnacious Matt.
Matt got Matt Brady right out of comedy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, way to go, Matt.
But it's not true.
It's not true. And no, Matt, and I'm sure everyone's read about it, Matt Brady has left Newsarama. We all wish him well. I know, and I'm speaking for the Newsarama people who have professed that sentiment already online, and I'm taking this opportunity to say good luck, Matt. You're a great guy, and it was a pleasure working with you.
We've lost one of the good ones.
No, he's a hell of a writer. He really is. And
he's
so
not dead.
No, he's not. No, he's not dead, but he is leaving comics.
He's
so,
dead to us.
Or you know, and I'm sure.
He's dead to me.
I'm sure he'll be at Heroes Con as a fan and you know, hanging out. Or maybe he'll take 10 years off. Who knows?
He might need a couple years off.
But no, that's great, man, and it's good to hear from
you,
Matt.
How is he going to fill the hole in his life created from not
having
to look at that fucked up message board?
Exactly. You know what I think?
What could possibly fill
the
life of people yelling at him the free service of Newsarama?
Married. I know he has at least one kid, and that's great. His one plus children and his wife will treat him well.
I don't think that'll do it. I think he'll need at least 9 children yelling at him at once.
Oh, man. Matt, what's
up? He's just trying to pick fights with his kid.
How are things in Utopia?
Good, done. On my part, yeah.
Cool.
At least my part's done.
Excellent. Matt, are you going to San Diego? I know Brian is not.
I am. I'm in Portland. I'm going from Portland to San Diego.
So, cool.
Yeah, I will be there. God help me, imminently.
Well, he's not going as a pro. He's actually president of the Kansas City Twilight fan club.
Oh, fantastic.
Getting together for the...
Is the tro?
I don't know if you've seen my dreamy sideburns, but they are pretty dreamy.
And he is vice president of the Furry Orgy Coalition that gets together.
Well, it's not really... I mean, president implies that there's a hierarchical structure, when in fact it's much more of a kind of orgy collective. It's like a co-op, but with boners.
Is that how
like
we met?
Boner co-op.
It's him, Rich Johnson.
Oh, hang on, I have to register boner co-op. Give me 1 second. Boner co-op dot biz.
Alex and Lee got that like 5 years ago.
is that where you met Kelly Sue then? Well, tell me about this meeting around the internet
co-op?
Thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
I met Kelly Sue at the boner co-op.
Not the boner co-op. No, how did you meet her on the internet?
I met her actually... she was a poster on the Warren Ellis forum.
That's hilarious.
As was I. And I came... This is where it gets really weird, is I came to Warren's work through a friend of mine who was really into it. And I was in art school at that point and had sort of drifted... It was one of those sort of... comics was bad. Lots of mainstream comics was real bad. I thought at this point. I mean, this was you know, this is even before.
This is back in 2005.
Yeah, exactly. House of how do you say that?
Nice.
but a friend of mine recommended Warren's work, and it was through me going and digging into Warren's work, which at that point he had just come on Stormwatch. Got me into Warren's work, and then led me to Warren's forum because Warren would always mention in the letter columns the forum. In my day, there were letter columns.
Sure.
Warren would always run the URL of his forum, and I eventually checked it out. And she was there, and that was how we met.
That's really cool.
Yeah. And then, as it turned out, that friend who recommended Warren to me was actually a friend of Kelly Sue's, unbeknownst to me.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, and it sort of And at that point, there was deafening silence on your end.
Well, that's why I gave you the end. Oh, that's funny.
He was
really
watching to the internet because he didn't know that any of them were actually girls.
Yeah, exactly.
He was very excited.
Hey, man, sadly, I can attest to that. I got a bunch of people when I was meeting David McKean last night coming up and going, I really like Word Balloon, and they were all men. And that's too, you know, and if I were gay, it'd be fantastic, but I'm not. So, but nice meeting you anyway,
gay.
Kids.
Something's such a pain in the ass. Yeah. Maybe this is the universe's way of giving you a sign.
Is that, really? Is it? Yeah, okay, I guess so. Thank you. Yeah. Is there anything you can talk about that won't wait? Are you making big announcements in San Diego, my friend? Okay.
What's happening at San Diego?
Hey, what are you doing? Well, something, right?
Wait, I think.
I would assume.
Hang on, let me have to pull up my let me pull up the schedule. And see.
Okay. And I know.
You got the list.
I was going to say he's got a list.
I can't talk about the list because the list comes directly out of Exodus, which is the end of X-Men Dark Avengers.
Who's your artist on your list?
The list is being drawn by Alan Davis.
Cool.
Or has been drawn by Alan Davis.
Outstanding.
We were the first one in, the first one done, and the first one we can't talk about.
Okay.
Everybody else can talk about theirs. I can't even talk about the setup of mine.
Interesting.
Mine is completely done, and it's really awesome.
Who do yours?
Marco Gervasilopoulos.
Yeah, Djurjevic.
And then, okay.
You say so.
He did it better than us.
And Mark Morales is inking it, and it's quite scrumptious, man. He was quite a pleasure.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
Quite a lovely walk in the park that man was.
Yeah, I got to work with Alan Davis again.
Yeah, sorry.
Screw you. Yeah, exactly.
I can't get him.
Yeah.
Wow.
He doesn't want the talkie heads or something. I don't know.
Man, loved him. Loved him for decades. He's a hell of an artist. He's amazing.
Me too.
Yeah. No, that's great, man. Well, and I'm excited to see what happens with the lists. And we've got a talk planned, Matt, late summer when the smoke clears from
the end, when I can actually talk about the list. And
cool.
Oh, wait, I worked with him once. I forgot. Sorry.
Who did you and Alan, and I'm forgetting. What did you and Alan do?
It's actually not widely known, but the first Spider-Man movie adaptation that was written by Stan Lee was also ghostwritten by myself a little bit. Stan was unavailable for rewrites and approved me doing it, but I didn't put my name. It says thanks to me, but I didn't take a writing credit because it wasn't certainly adapting someone else's adaptation of someone else's work.
Sure.
That was an adaptation of the original author's work in the first place. It seemed that putting the written by credit on it was quite a stretch.
I understand. You know? Yeah, I believe I came up with Crusher Hogan. Thank you.
I'm just rearranging things. I'm not exactly actually crafting sentences here.
Sure.
So that was, and Alan Davis drew that.
That's cool.
So suck it. I don't know who.
Excellent.
Someone
somewhere should be sucking it.
Matt, any recent documentary recommendations?
What did I see?
He broke.
I saw Last of the Asbury Jukes, Morgan Freeman's Blues Bar that he owns right by where Robert Johnson supposedly made his deal with the devil at the crossroads.
Morgan Freeman, like narrator of everything Morgan Freeman? Did he narrate his own documentary about his own blues club?
The Penguins love to come to my
Around
blues
that
bar.
That time I thought it was time to buy a jazz and blues club.
And he always enjoyed coming to my juice, my juice box.
I've got a lot of recommendations.
Oh yeah, let's see here.
Just off the top of your head,
King of Kong was the my favorite movie last summer.
Excellent.
That's cool. What about Crazy Love? Was there any? Oh, that's the movie about the guy who throws the acid in the lady's face,
yes.
And then they end up getting married.
Yeah, they met on the Warren Ellis form too.
That's right.
I don't know that movie. I'm thinking of that Drew Barrymore movie where she's crazy or whatever.
I saw a really great Sam Fuller, A Life in Pictures.
Very cool. Yes. Seeing that as well.
Yeah, they have telling stories of how you make pictures.
Did you guys see?
What else are you thinking about?
How about the filmmakers that came from Germany in the 30s and stuff to change Hollywood? I thought that was really
great.
Cool.
That was really good too.
Took me a long time to see.
3.5 hours long.
Yeah,
by the way, the last time John said,
I'm pretty sure the Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles, is not actually a documentary.
Are you sure?
I don't think that's happened.
Okay.
So I gave him a pile of DVDs. Like, here, what about these? I thought he was.
I'm in the process of moving, so I'm.
I can appreciate that, a little culture shy while you're packing boxes. I understand. I've been following the progress.
I gave
progress.
Him a pile of documentaries for him to read off, like he just thought of them.
Oh,
and
good.
In the pile was Terminator, yep. Sarah Connor, which I didn't even know I had.
How did that get in there?
I don't know. It must have been
stuck to another good DVD.
I don't know if you could tell from looking at this wall here. I have a problem.
Listen, if that's wrong, I don't want to be right.
Yeah, I have an issues. I have problems.
Well, that's what's keeping me from Blu-ray is my mountain of DVDs. I understand. I mean, I just, you know, I'm like, great. I just, like, restocked
John,
in this
life
technology.
Life isn't complete until you've triple-dipped on the third man. Okay?
Exactly, man. No, I did it with music. Never
life
again,
isn't
man.
Life is complete until you double-dip on the Hulk movie that just came out because you're not sure if you like it more on Blu-ray or DVD. And then Marvel goes, oh, hey, you want one?
Here's one.
On top of the ones you already bought.
Hey, great.
You forget that you work for Marvel and maybe you'll get one, but now you're going.
Hey, can we comment on current news? Geoff Johns possibly producing a Flash movie? I know that's across the street, but I think that's kind
of
cool.
I don't know what any of those words mean that you just said.
Nice.
Who? No, nice. I'm thrilled. Yeah, this is the way it's going to go, man. As predicted here on this podcast, the dam is burst. These guys are going to figure out, why would you spend millions of dollars hiring someone to imitate Geoff Johns when Geoff Johns is standing there?
It's a Barton Fink thing, you know. Like, yeah, you got a room full of guys who can give us that Barton Fink feeling, but as you're Barton Fink, we assume you have it in spades. Like, oh.
Yeah. No, so that actually it's thrilling news, and every move like that, I think, is a positive one.
Very cool.
So yay!
And then there's a little nugget buried in that article that they had quietly hired Jeff and Grant Morrison and Marv Wolfman last year, all of them to kind of act as consultants or producers or.
I saw that as well.
Buried in the very last graph of that of the story in the Hollywood Reporter Variety. That's really interesting. So imagine that, you know, right now, you know,
they are pitching the
Grant
largest
Morrison is
crossover.
Pitching the Batman movie, or Marv Wolfman is
or the largest crossover crises ever in the history of
exactly. Yeah. In your face, Avengers movie opening summer 2012. Crisis opened summer 2013.
That's right.
Do we continue with the mailbag with Matt?
I can hop off. I was just sort of hanging out.
I'll throw him on if we.
Give me a shot. I'll hop on. I'll have the phone here and I'll hop on.
Okay,
John,
very good.
Pleasure as always. I look forward to talking to you in August.
As always, Matt, and I hope to see you soon as well as talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, sir.
My pleasure, man. All right, back to it, kids. I know because like half of people are really excited about that. And the other half, we get back to the questions, please. So,
yeah.
ARG, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. B, I'm curious. You've most recently been chatting Norman Osborn's sudden rise to and potential fall from power. I'm wondering if there's a parallel there with your life, meaning your sudden rise to creative dominance in Marvel. You have to admit your ideas have been the driving force for most of the stories over the last few years. You are literally creating jobs. Obama would be proud. And I wonder if that experience is either subconsciously or consciously being expressed in your current work. In interviews, you've expressed that you are aware that your time on top will be finite, as it is with everyone. What other life experiences have found their way into your work?
Now he's talking about Norm, like, and I think the parallel between Dark Reign.
Yeah, do you have a schizo voice, like freaking out every day?
It's an interesting premise that immediately falls apart upon any type of examination. Clearly Jeff Loeb is Norman Osborn, not me. No, but now the guy asked me if he sees any correlation between Dark Reign and my existence in comics. And that I've risen to power, and clearly there's going to be a fall coming. So, no, I don't have a self-destructive inner goblin voice telling me what to do. Well, I do, but is there nothing I can't control? Nothing that, you know, nothing that gets in the way of everyday life as a father and anything. So I'm under contract.
Well, that's good. But you have said that you're breathing rarefied air, and I know that
sure, absolutely. No, okay. No. There's half a point there.
Yeah.
I'll give him credit for half a point. And I also think I'm using my powers for good.
There you
Maybe.
Go.
I don't know.
Well, so does Norman, according to you, sir.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Settle down over there. What do you want from me? I know I'm out the door. No, that yes, it's show business, and there it cycles, and whatever, man.
Also, can you have Mike start drawing, or actually, I guess in this case, well, no, it would be Mike still, Mike Deodato, drawing Novar in the Janice Vell costume? And I'm sure I'm saying those names wrong.
Yeah, you are. No, you're saying them right. No, we a lot of discussion has been had about Novar's bicycle pants and what to do with them. If I knew J.G. Jones better, I would flat out ask him what the hell was going on there. It does seem like an odd choice for him. He's an excellent designer. I uh, We've given him full mad pants. If you're looking for some sort of mirror to my life, I recently had an intervention. I had an intervention with my friends, David Mack and Mike Oeming and others, that sat me down and told me to cut it out with the shorts in public, that I should put on big boy pants, and that I make a nice living and to stop dressing like them.
Yeah, very few legs hold up after 40.
And or Robert Kirkman. So I said, you're right, and I started wearing big boy pants, and then we put big boy pants on Marvel Boy. So
there's your life correlation. There you go. Don't look to Norman. Look to Marvel's pants. Very nice.
I am Marvel Boy. That's right. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, and then he had. That was it. All right, Shepard, actually from Busan, South Korea. Interesting. I don't know if that's true or not, but I'll take his word for it.
Of course, it's true. Who lies about that?
Well, you know, that's funny because sometimes someone will say,
"The community of fans have come together."
Sir, you don't have to. Word Balloon fans span the globe. Not only Bendis tape fans, but other fans as well. You're absolutely right.
I don't
right.
care about those other people.
I know you don't. Dina's story seems to kind of have ended with the last issue of Powers Volume 2. Is she going to be back for Volume 3? This is a good question. If so, will she be a major player or a minor player, or is that too spoilery?
It's too spoilery, but she will be back.
What comic book movie that hasn't been made and isn't being made would you like to see? That's a good one.
Torso.
Nice.
Directed by David Fincher in black and white.
I
remember the day before Christmas last year, someone called me and told me it was greenlit. Oh, and then it wasn't.
And that was in the middle of our last Bendis tape session. Is there a, and I know that things were kind of in limbo and looking doubtful, so that's obviously changed for the worse.
It did. It was weird. I'm not exactly sure what happened, but we were called and officially greenlit.
I remember.
And then a week later, we were ungreenlit. And it had to do with things going on way behind the scenes with not the major players. So it just went away, and so it happens to be that the people who were running Paramount at the time are no longer there.
Okay.
And
we all know what happens when that happens.
Yeah, that's public news, and one of the reasons they weren't there was for not greenlighting anything. They greenlit no movies except for the last Airbender.
Yes, 25% less movies this year were greenlit since the economy dropped and everything.
Yeah, and what's funny is that you can't make any money if you don't greenlight anything.
Exactly, yes.
That guy was ousted. So there's still things going on. It's not dead. The fight is still happening, and a lot of news happened this week that I'll wait to see if it's true or not.
Okay.
I tend to just get a little zen about it and go, that would be great. I just go, anytime someone tells me something, I go, yeah, that would be great.
Still at Paramount or somewhere else? And you don't have to get specific.
I'm not at liberty to say, but okay. The rights did revert back to us, so
okay.
We have a little bit more control over some of the shenanigans as they proceed.
I understand.
Yep.
We move on to Ked.
And the shenanigans will be proceeding.
David
Fincher was a cool guy, that I'll say. It's one of those people you meet that you worship, and you're glad you met them. Sometimes you meet people and you go, oh, I wish I never met you. He was an interesting and fascinating guy who taught me a lot in the short conversations that we had.
Excellent.
Yeah.
This is from Ked from the San Francisco area, and he says, thanks again for this chance to interact. And Ked, it was a pleasure meeting you at WonderCon. In fact, at a Matt Fraction panel.
Yeah.
Mr. Bendis, could you take us through your
process? You know, that wasn't really Matt Fraction before.
Boy, that was an incredible facsimile.
That was Ed Brubaker. It was an incredible Matt Fraction.
Hey.
Oh, you guys want to talk to Ed Brubaker?
Yeah. Hey, is Brew around?
Hey, Ed, get on the phone.
Hey.
Ed, hey, man, I'm really excited to hear about the Criminal Omnibus. I'm
excited about Angel of Death.
Yeah, at San Diego, I don't know, I think Sony's doing, I've lost it a little bit. All right.
Thank you. Brian, can you take us through your
process? What would it be if Ed Brubaker had a talk with Walter Matthau? That would be like.
I enjoy your work. I understand your.
Matt's not a dancing monkey. He just gave me the finger. He ain't doing it.
I was ready.
Yeah.
All right.
I will tell you that the highlight of the Ed Brubaker impersonation is when Ed started imitating Matt doing Ed at the retreat.
Hey.
Not kind of realizing what he was doing, and that was funny.
God. Oh,
it's very hard to picture, I know, but it was. Yeah, he started doing himself in a loop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. It's like, and once I hear somebody break a voice, I'm like, okay, fine. Now I got to, like, study that. Like, Jamie Foxx was on Conan explaining how he imitates Obama. And I'm like, oh, that's good. And literally, I'm, like listening to that. And I'm nowhere, it's not ready for prime time. But I do. I always get excited when someone, like, presents a new voice.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for me. I understand. Exactly.
I'm just amazed that you made a reference to something that happened this decade.
Hey, man, see? I pay attention.
I remember when Dean Martin was on John DeCarson, and boy, that was...
Exactly, flicking his ass.
Flicking his asses and George Gobel.
George Gobel, you see, and you know it. That's why you're a poser, man, because you're right there in 1962 with me. Can you take us through your process of breaking and developing a story through the first draft? Really, Ken? I mean, you know...
Well, you know, I mean, I don't have
no,
a set
me.
Way that I do it. So that I don't have a great answer. There's an essay on my website that you can go to that talks about writing in general. But I find that when people have a way they break a story, that this is what they do, they end up writing the same story over and over and over again, and not completely interested in that, even though there's themes and ideas that I keep returning to because I'm haunted like every writer. But I sometimes break a story by really beating out the beats. And you can see a version of that on Tom Brevoort's blog this week at Marvel.com. He's been posting the different, how Secret Invasion kind of birthed itself.
Okay.
Out of different drafts of things and things that were decided upon or left behind and other things. Sometimes I kind of know what the story's about and take the characters for a spin to see what will happen and then start building the story, you know. It really, really depends. But most importantly, it's you have to know why you're telling the story and where you're going. Those are very, very important. I know that sounds, of course, silly, but some people do start stories and have no idea why they're telling them. And as contradictory as I am about to sound, sometimes that's the right thing to do because sometimes you have to let the characters go for a spin so you can figure out who they are, you know?
He wants to, and I know Ked is serious about being an aspiring writer, so...
Ked, I'll tell you, you know, there's many books on the subject, but the thing I just read this week that I loved was someone gave it to me for Christmas, and I just was sitting here, and I didn't think much of it. There is a making of the Indiana Jones movies, a big, giant book called The Complete Making of Indiana Jones, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is the most exhaustive, detail-oriented look at the process from the very, very beginning to the very, very end. Everything is chronicalized. Everything is shown, including, and this is floating online too, this 19-page,
open discussion?
The open discussion between Lucas, Spielberg, and Kasdan,
yes,
about Indiana Jones and what it means and what the story. And it's them breaking the story out loud. It's them breaking the story, and it's the notes of that meeting.
That's cool.
And how they took those characters for a spin, and maybe Marion should be the villain.
Oh, interesting.
And maybe the head Nazi is a French guy, and the French guy's a Nazi, and all these ideas and set pieces, and some of which made into the next movie, some of which were just abandoned. And, you know, in because we're kids of this age, Raiders of the Lost Ark seems like this perfectly formed action movie, right?
Yep.
And then when you see three storytellers trying to figure it out.
And
you
the
go,
misfires,
oh, man.
Yeah.
It, you know, inspires, it makes you relax a little bit because when you're trying to break a story and you're trying to, like, note out a story or note out what the characters are trying to figure it out, you think, man, why can't I figure this out? Or why isn't it coming to me right away? And what's the right to, you know, you, why can't I just create Indiana Jones? Or they just seemed to appear out of thin air in perfect form, right? But it wasn't. In fact, up until filming, he was like a womanizing scumbag until Harrison Ford kind of stepped in and said, well, that's not interesting. You know, but I reading this book and all the decisions that could have been made or not made, it's fascinating. So I recommend that if you want to kind of inspire yourself to break a story.
That's cool. In my last talk with Rucka, he mentioned the Kasdan, Spielberg, Lucas conversation. So that's
it makes
really cool.
Any writer feel better. Maybe writers that have finished a few things, you think, why isn't this any easier than the first day I did it?
and then you realize, oh, it wasn't any easier for them at all. It makes you just feel better.
He specific. I want to stay on the first question for Kit because he has a very specific point. Now, if you have an answer to this, is there a difference between your process for a single issue versus a larger arc? Can you speak to that?
No.
Okay.
No, I can't. I mean, other than the fact that you're getting to maybe a simpler point.
Well, that's what I was going to wonder
in
terms of
full-blown
story
issues and the full-blown epic stories, like the Free Comic Day story was all in one issue, and I've done intimate stories that took a few issues, you know. So there's no, not really.
Okay.
Most of it is. It's what's the point of this? Why am I doing this?
Okay.
And sometimes I'm amazed. Some writers don't do that. They don't. They don't really take a moment to think about what they're doing. They're just going, you know, this is writing zombie porn or something.
It is, but there are less.
Nothing wrong with that.
Are there less beats? Like, are there less than 22 beats for a 22-page story?
I don't know. I don't. There's no right answer.
Okay.
This is a frustrating thing. Sometimes people, while they're searching for answers, they're looking for some mathematical formula that creates the perfect story. There is none.
Okay.
And I knew someone in my life who actually drove themselves crazy trying to find it. Kind of like A Beautiful Mind, you know. And there is no right or wrong answer. There's no perfect way to tell a story. There's things that work. Like a three-act structure, and it works, and you should study it, and you should figure out how it works and why it works and how it works for you, and then decide how you can interpret it and break it and, you know, put it back together.
Sure.
But so you have to learn. You know, I tell a man, read Story by Robert McKee.
Yep.
I'm sure you've heard this before. It's the best book on the subject because it's the best written book on the subject. There are other books about writing that are so goddamn boring.
I completely agree.
How could you write about this subject and be boring the shit out of me?
From writers you really respect. I mean, I know of comedy writers that have written brilliant, you know, they've written brilliant comedy, but not so brilliant books on how to write comedy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I understand. And this is a good question, and I know you've answered it before, but it's worth repeating. Any advice for those of us that are aspiring comic creators when it comes to getting our limited products out into the world? I've been giving my mini comic out to anyone that makes the mistake of sitting still too long, including Matt Fraction and Ed Brubaker, but I'm wondering what else I can do, and I think I know one of your answers to that.
Well, publish it on the web.
Yep.
Create your own little universe on the web there. If I was up and coming, I absolutely would do this. Your portfolio is now one click away from anybody you needed to get it to. Whether they'll click on it or not, it's up to you. But, in the old days, all you had to do was to publish it. But really, you can create your own little universe, you know, your own little Warren Ellis world or King's world or something. You can do this by yourself.
And
you should, and there's nothing stopping you at all.
Yeah, and I would say, too, with, the coming answers, we covered this in part one of our conversation, but with, you know, the different platforms that are being developed for digital comics, I think more important than ever it is to have a free product or a free sample, but then also that you don't have to worry about, you know, stapling the mini comics anywhere.
Yeah, I mean
as much.
Print media will be dead on October 22nd.
No, I don't mean that. Yeah, exactly.
I'm telling you, I got the memo.
Well, but honestly, for the independent creator, I do think that the digital, you know, comics, yeah, it's the best possible
Absolutely.
Thing that could have happened. And yeah, so.
Absolutely.
Jeffrey Longmont. Thanks, John and Brian, for doing this again. I'll be sad when John finally wises up and charges money for these. Not going to happen, Jeffrey. Don't worry about it.
I'm amazed.
That's what sponsors are for. No, man, I'll get my money somehow, but as far as I'm concerned, the user should not have to pay for it, and maybe it's because I've enjoyed television and radio for most of my adult life and childhood. So
yeah.
There you go. There's a plus for being an old man. How much extra text do you put into your scripts that doesn't make it to the page, like jokes, encouragement, or extra detail just to put the artist in the proper perspective?
Tons. Tons. I was writing silly jokes to Dave LaFuente last night. Just images and ideas that would get him in the mood, not to Indiana Jones again, but there was a shot. Spider-Man turns around and sees something coming at him, and I wrote, like, Indiana Jones turning around to see the boulder. You know what I mean? But I would never, like, put that in. Meanwhile, Spider-Man turns around like Indiana Jones to see the boulder, you know. Sometimes a little doodads and whatnot. It's the best part. It's the thing when I'm working on screenplays, it's the thing I miss the most, because you were absolutely not allowed to do that in the screenplay. That is called amateur city. But in comics,
whatever you need to communicate to the other people making it to do their job is fair game.
Only post from Mike Berry. He's only put one post up, and he's from Sydney, Australia. Hi, Brian. Any chance if you'll ever come to Sydney, Australia, that is?
I have been to Sydney twice in my life, and I loved it, and I was invited to go this year, but I could not go, and I offered to come next year. So if that is still available next year, if they come around again, I will come, because I went twice, once by myself and once with my family, and it is a magical, awesome place. And boy, do they love their comics in Sydney and in New Zealand. And that is one of those places where you land there and you go, I cannot believe comics brought me all the way to fucking New Zealand. And then you rent a bike and you go for a long, long bike ride on the coast and you go, look where the hell I am. That's awesome.
I can only imagine, because the few Australian listeners that I have, I don't think I've gotten any New Zealanders yet, but the Aussies that have emailed me, I really appreciate it. And it blows my, especially being an old radio guy, it blows my mind that I'm on the other side of the world and somebody in Australia gives a shit about what I'm doing.
You
so that's great.
You can't even walk, man, if you showed up in Sydney, you wouldn't even walk the streets.
Awesome,
there,
man.
You are.
Am I a god in Australia? Is that true?
Non-Sutras mania. Taken over Melbourne, they kind of can't stand you, but in Sydney,
there you go.
Holy shit!
Nicola Scott likes me.
They do. No, they in the park. They have like they do word balloon like readings. They just have people addresses you.
Hi, did you analyze word balloon? It was great. That was wonderful.
All right. You doing voices.
Say, that's my Paul Hogan for you,
but,
kids.
Yeah. And before I moved to Portland, where you would see this often, I was in New Zealand riding my bike, and you would see people, kids, reading comic books outside. Without society shunning them.
That's good.
And hitting them with things. So I remember I stopped my bike and stared at it because I'd never seen it before.
For real? That's awesome.
No, they really were sitting there. I saw a boy and a girl reading an issue of Grant Morrison's X-Men and discussing it as they were reading it together. And I literally stopped my bike and went, what the fuck is going on? Because I'd never seen that. And this is the same guy who was, not the day before, on the plane reading a comic book as if he was reading a porn.
Yeah, you got to hide it with, like, Time Magazine or something wrapped
exactly.
around it.
So, but in Portland you see it a lot, but I never saw it before that.
Very cool. He asks also about covers. He loves the Powers covers. In your opinion, what considerations go into making a great comic book cover?
I think not a lot of people do this, but a comic book cover is supposed to be an actual book cover, and book cover has an art form to itself, and you should be able to see, it should catch your eye from across the room and catch your eye in your hand and captivate you and want you to make you open the book. And these are simple, you know, read Chip Kidd's book on book design. It, you know, it show you how to do it. That is why the Powers logo is so large. Because that's how you get people to go, oh, there's Powers.
I also
to this day, I love when you go in the store and you can see that logo from a mile away.
You know, David Mack does beautiful covers. I really like what's been happening really since the 80s and on in terms of guys like Tim Bradstreet and David McKean. And I really wanted to point out when Joe Casey and Richard Starkings Comic Craft guys get together, there's always a very interesting cover. And I think even beyond just wonderful art, I think a lot of interesting things are happening with covers these days.
Yeah, and even as we speak, I swear to God, as we speak, the French publishers of Powers just sent me a cover design for approval, and it's awesome.
Does Mike do anything different for the French, or do they take the existing art and do crazy stuff?
They take existing, and they always make it much better than what we do.
Cool. No, well, you know,
every foreign edition is better than the American edition.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I remember in the 80s seeing all the annuals that would come over from overseas, and, yeah, just be blown away. And it's like, wow, look at that hardcover of the X-Men.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and every once in a while, some of it slips in here, like the Ted McKeever hardbacks are really nice. They're very European-looking.
Cool.
I think that's the direction we're gonna do. Is Iron Man hard covers like that too? Matt's talking to us as if we're not.
I love what, yeah, much like Ed at a panel.
Yeah, he's talking. He says you're like Ed at a panel. Just start talking. Anyway, so I'm going to do a series of hardbacks at Icon for the Jinx World books, and I think that's the format we're going
to
use.
Excellent. And I wanted to ask to clarify when you were talking about everything that was coming out at the end of the year.
Yes.
When the other Jinx World stuff comes out from Icon, they're all going to have a uniform look?
Yes.
As far as spine
people
or whatever?
People like it. I like it. Everybody likes it.
Very good.
Yes.
The Kraken. I was just thinking that it had been a while since the last one of these. Thanks in advance, guys. I love listening to them. It was a pleasure finally meeting you at Heroes, Brian.
Yes.
With the elevation of Brother Voodoo, or Dr. Voodoo, to Sorcerer Supreme, you now personally have taken an interest in catapulting two black men and two women who were never really considered A-list heroes into the big leagues. I think it's great that you've done this, and I hope that Dr. Voodoo turns out to be as interesting and fun to read as Luke Cage or Spider-Woman. There's been a lot of...
I was, Rick Remender was also over here for dinner. We had a little barbecue for Matt.
Cool.
Here at the house, and Rick was beaming how happy he was with the first issue of Dr. Voodoo. So I believe if his enthusiasm, which was very genuine, translates to the page, it will be a very fine book.
Any fan of Fractions, or I'm sorry, any fan of Remender's that has been enjoying his stuff since his Image days will knows that, yeah, the guy brings it. And, yeah, I think Brother Voodoo is perfect for him, Dr. Voodoo.
Hello. And Rick Remender is a huge Frankie Goes to Hollywood fan. That's what I found out tonight. That's a joke for two people. So
two tribes. When they go to war, money's all that you can score.
That's what we were listening to. It was on the radio, and he got very upset.
Great video, though.
It was that song. That was very funny.
Great video with the...
You had a 50-50 chance of getting the song right there.
Well, yeah, it was either Relax or Two Tribes. remember, though, great scene in the De Palma film. Which film was it again? Where they?
It was Body Double.
Body Double, yes.
Up until the point where I hit puberty, my favorite movie.
Oh, yeah, that's, yeah, great naked movie.
I had never seen the Hitchcock movie, so I thought that movie was amazing. I saw Body Double in the theater, and it blew my mind. Swear to God.
Oh, I can understand.
I was completely
You're right.
Then I saw North by Northwest, and I went, oh.
And To Catch a Thief. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
Oh, no, there's a ton of Hitchcock films in there. Absolutely. I'm sure Matt could rattle off another five that we're not thinking of.
He's a cover band, yeah.
Yeah, he is, unfortunately.
Not all the time, but that movie was.
Well, even Jonathan Demme does it sometimes, so what are you going to do?
And I remember I had the movie poster up in my room. It said, from the modern master suspense, even referred to him.
I remember that, too. Yeah. Yikes.
Yeah.
There's
never refer to yourself as things like that.
Yeah, that is a little self-congratulating. There's been a lot of discussion about the need for more diversity in superhero comics.
Yeah.
I was just curious if these elevating Luke Cage and Spider-Woman and now Dr. Voodoo, if these things just happened to be characters that you liked, or if you are working more towards diversity, if that was a conscious goal for you.
No, you can't. You know, I have a very diverse family, and I live a diverse life, so I'm sure it has something to do with it. But I think what most importantly is I just don't see it as any big deal. It doesn't matter to me that Brother Voodoo is black or white or whatever. It just doesn't matter. And if you start acting that way, if you start writing that way, or sort of, the comic book version of Affirmative Action or something, it would come across as fake. It would be... It wouldn't be doing any good for anybody, I don't think. I think it's just a matter of that these characters are interesting, and it doesn't matter, and it shouldn't matter. You know what I mean? But it's part of their character, and that's interesting. And
sure.
Always, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and I really think the change, especially with Dr. Voodoo, as it elevates him, it makes Steven interesting as, you know, someone that is...
I think it makes the whole magic landscape of Marvel more interesting.
There you go.
And the fact that, you know, Wade's got a series coming out, Rick series, and some other stuff we're going to pick up with in Avengers next year. Yeah, it's all more interesting.
Special K. Hey again, John and Brian. Always love and appreciate Word Balloon, the Bendis tapes, and the Bendis books. After the list was announced this past weekend, Tom Brevoort said in an IGN interview that there was originally a ninth one-shot to be included, but that idea was excised. Can you reveal what that story was supposed to be, who it was supposed to be about, or are you saving that puppy for a rainy day?
Yeah, I don't actually know what he was talking about. I was in the room when they kind of put together the teams. We kind of did that in New York, and we were asked for... we asked the creators if they wanted to do it, and everyone said yes. So no one said no, so I'm not exactly sure what he's referring. Maybe something they thought of up there when we left, but I don't know.
Pastepot Pete and the Impossible Man kill each other.
Could have been.
Okay.
Could have been.
There you go. Will Stephen Strange and or Dr. Voodoo be team members or supporting characters as New Avengers progresses?
We're going to let him breathe on his own a little bit, and then he's going to come back.
Which
he? The best way. He needs to build up.
Which he? Steven, Dr. Voodoo, or both?
Are they not the same person? I'm just joking.
There you go.
No, Steven will not be in Avengers. Dr. Voodoo will be popping in and out.
Leaf Insect Man. Hi, John and Brian. Thanks again for doing one of these and for being.
What do you think that name means?
You know, I hate bugs. Another Sydney person, by the way.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know. So, yeah, bugs oog me out, so I don't even want to think about it.
Okay.
Hi, Brian and John. Thanks for doing another one of these and for being the super fantastic gentleman that you are. Marvel's been doing an incredible job lately of developing and fleshing out new and interesting characters as well as young heroes and legacy characters. And I really appreciate the effort that Marvel has put into it. If you guys...
I appreciate how much you appreciate it.
If you guys, you too, John, were to write a team book made up of the best... of the best new and younger heroes and legacy characters, who would be your picks? Bonus question for John, ever thought about getting into writing? I've been a writer covering sports and stuff, so I always have writing.
And you have your, you know, you've been frequently published in the pages of Penthouse Forum. And
I'm a sophomore at a small Midwestern college.
No, a lot of people don't know. You invented the phrase, I never thought it would happen to me.
Never thought these letters were true until the following happened to me.
That was with the great power comes great responsibility of
of Penthouse for it. Yeah, it really is.
Come on, I just said literotica out loud.
The next one's from Lord Retail. He didn't make the deadline, so I thought I'd give him one of my questions.
Just call Lord Retail on the phone. You know, this is a little behind the scenes thing. I was saving.
Cool.
I meant to say this earlier.
Okay.
All right. So, I was thinking of things to do to promote Powers Volume 3, and we really want to come out swinging, and it really came great and everything. So, we thought maybe we would do a retailer like contest, and whoever puts the biggest best foot forward for Powers, the prize would be the big prize would be that me and Mike would come.
Oh, very nice.
As for free and show up there like this, that's a big deal.
Cool. Yeah, absolutely, that's a big deal.
But I thought that, you know, let's do that. And then I was riding my bike. I was thinking, well, Lord Retail will probably win. He's crazy. He's a crazy man. And he's a cult leader. He has a cult of people that follow him.
We learned this in part one, yes.
So, and I'm telling you right now, I don't know anything about the Eisners. I don't know. If the Eisners do not give him... that award.
Is he up for the Spirit of Light?
Yeah, someone's going to get hurt. You don't understand that these people are nuts. So
he's up against a good Chicago guy, my dear friend Mark Beatty, and I'd be horrible not to mention that. And good luck to both Jermaine and Mark. I respect both of you. I had to say that because he's a friend.
Thanks for grinding my story to a halt. But anyway, I was thinking, I go, really, we win this contest, and then Lord Retail would win, and then I would put him through the loop for nothing. Why don't I just call him up and say, hey, guess what, we're coming, because he's asked us 1,000 times.
Oh, that's really nice.
So I called Lord Retail, and I said, in Acme Comics in somewhere,
yes.
And I said, where is it?
North Carolina.
North Carolina. That's where I said I was going? Jesus.
Yeah,
anyway,
really?
I called him up, and I said, hey, tell you what, me and Mike, we're coming to Acme Comics, and he said, yeah, we were just in the middle of a conversation about Vertigo, like I was interrupting him. So I said, well, do you want us to come? He went, oh yeah, I guess, sure, whatever. No, he was putting on his cool voice, being cool. He's being
aloof, yes.
He's being aloof and coy.
Okay.
But that he's very excited. So we
That's
are going
great.
To make, literally, I haven't done a store signing in forever. We're going to show up at Acme Comics in November. As soon as we find out the actual scheduled date of power shipping, which would be in November.
Excellent.
And also, but what's funny is, so Marvel is doing this promotion, and if I have these details wrong, please forgive me. But on August 11th of this year is Marvel's 70th anniversary, and they're doing like a bunch of Barnes & Nobles. At the same time, at the same moment, we'll be having some sort of Marvel party.
Oh, great.
And in Portland, We're going to, me, Rick Remender, and Jeff Parker will be at the Barnes & Noble in Clackamas, which is a very good one. And
I had Clackamas. Go on.
Well, it's next to an Auntie Anne, so I win either way, whatever
okay.
happens. I'm getting pretzels.
All right.
And so we're going to be there for a little, my first ever Barnes & Noble situation. So come dress as Harry Potter and win a prize.
Do you guys like speak as well as sign? I mean,
I asked to do a Q&A. I think we're going to do it just because I don't think they know what I'm not sure what's going on. I'll have more information later on, but that's
okay.
I'm definitely going to be in a Barnes and Noble.
That's great. Well,
I might be just sitting by the magazines reading.
You'll be in the Starbucks inside and everything. Yeah.
Me, Rick, and Jeff will be there 7 o'clock on August 11th at Barnes and Noble.
Terrific.
What was the question?
That was a good question. That actually covered things because the question that he gave to Lord Retail was a question that we already answered in part one,
right,
which was if you had a good time at HeroesCon, which we
covered. I did have a good time. And I told you my best time was watching Lord Retail run his cult. I've never actually seen that in live in person.
Kubrick, 1978. Thanks once again for this. I can't wait until Spider-Woman comes out. You've turned her into my second favorite Marvel character behind Daredevil.
But who knew she was British?
What?
We released the trailer, and she has a slight British accent because she's born in England and lived in England as a child. And because there are people on the internet who did not know this information, I'm a dick. I am an unholy dick from Dickland.
Well, either you or Quesada will get the blame for that.
And then they would go to Wikipedia, look it up, and lo and behold, there it is in black and white Wikipedia. So she's British. And because I don't write her to sound like Dick Van Dyke in the Mary Poppins movie, I clearly don't know anything at all ever in the history of the world. And what the hell am I doing in the...
Was that little colonel covered in the Luna Brothers origin story?
Yes.
All right.
It's covered everywhere.
You see,
it's covered in the 70s. It's covered in the origin story. It's covered in the short-lived cartoon.
That gives me an opportunity to give a shout-out to Joshua and Jonathan, who are great guys and wonderful artists, and the sword is awesome.
This weekend, actually.
Oh, very cool, man. I have not talked to Jonathan forever, and shame on me, and I should do that very soon.
Yes. I'd like to work with them again.
That would be great, man. They are wonderful artists. Do you have any rules for pacing action scenes, and when do you think is the best time to change a scene?
Well, the rule of changing a scene, of scene transition is, and this is one I do hold by, is get in late and leave early. That's the best way to do it. The scene should already be going on, and as soon as the point of your scene has been said, get out. Don't hang around for one-liners. Don't dilly-dally. Move on. And that is words to live by. Right, Matt Faction? Yeah, he's getting sleepy.
Nodding emphatically.
And so as far as the rules of the choreography of an action scene, you know, it depends on the action scene. Of course, it could be very different for a group fight versus, a Spider-Man or Daredevil. It really depends on the people and how they fight. You know, there's a certain bounce to a Spider-Man fight, for kind of high-flying, you know what I mean?
Sure.
With the group things, I kind of tend to choreograph them like war movies, like, you know, battles, like, even though everyone is trained and everyone has a power set, when you throw 10 people in a room at full blast, it's going to be madness and chaos. And I've seen some people react very harshly to seeing that on the page, but that's been the instruction for some of my artists, that like if there's a rumble, that it should feel like a rumble. It shouldn't feel like, you know, like a dance. You know, like a lot of times we think of like Jackie Chan movies, which are really ballet movies, you know, and they're cool, but, you know, that only works for certain types of fight scenes.
Do you ever, as a shortcut, just like have the big two-page splash of let's throw everybody on there and just...
No.
Okay.
Frank Cho asked me to do that for him.
Okay.
Here, give me 5 pages for a fight scene. Don't worry about it. And Jesus Christ, I just couldn't do it.
Okay.
And sometimes I'll write a fight scene, the artist will do something else, but still get us to the same place, you know?
Sure.
But without describing all the elements that I thought were important, I didn't think there was. How do you get to the important part? How do you get to the big finale if you don't know all the pieces that got there? So, and it just made me feel better. I said, here, I'll write it up. Do whatever you want. I don't know how to get to this last bit without having worked it out in my head, a version of this. And then that's another interesting thing about the Indiana Jones movies is that, you know.
The final scene?
Yeah, he'll make it up. He'll get there. We had it planned out. They had a storyboard. And he looks around. And he comes up with other stuff. And some of it's the stuff you remember the most.
Orson Welles always talked about that in his interviews, happy accidents and you know, having a plan and then discovering something while you're shooting that turns out to be, like you said, the most memorable thing. Let's see. Lastly, what do you think are the best movie scripts made and not made?
The best movie scripts made and not made. I've read a few movie scripts that were excellent that were never made. I remember...
How about Harlan Ellis' script that he said Hollywood would never buy? I always meant to read that, and I still haven't. I don't know if you have.
Yeah, he's a little full of himself.
really? By the way, there's another good documentary.
What?
That Ellison.
Harlan Ellison full of himself?
No, you know, what? Dreams with Sharp Teeth.
Okay, yeah.
It was excellent.
Yeah, he's a fascinating man, but any run-in with him in real life is weird. I've told that story.
Oh, yeah.
House, right?
Yeah, yep.
Okay. I read one called The Crowded Room that James Cameron was going to make years ago, and it was about a person with multiple personalities and how the personalities all manifested itself. It wasn't too far off from what ended up being that movie about the hotel with John Cusack. I can't remember the name of it.
Oh, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, yes.
I don't mean to ruin that movie for anybody who hasn't seen it in the last 7 years, but it ended up that it was all in the guy's mind. But it was like that. It was called The Crowded Room. And there's also one called The Ticking Man I remember reading that I love. And also David Lynch had quite a few screenplays that never got made, including one called One Saliva Bubble that was really, really good. Written for Steve Martin. And literally about someone blew a saliva. Someone was in a nuclear power plant, a guard in a nuclear power plant.
Okay.
Was blowing saliva bubbles. And one bubble just floated down into the core. And it caused a little glitch, and the town completely turned upside down because of it. And it was a really good movie. It was written for Steve Martin, that's true.
Interesting.
And I just read, and it's floating on the internet, and anyone can get it, I just read Aaron Sorkin's Facebook script. That is great. Fantastic.
About Facebook or a...
It's about the creation, how Facebook came about.
Interesting.
And supposedly some of it's true, some of it's not true. That this guy, this Ben Mezrich, who also wrote the 21 thing.
Uh-huh, yes.
Who, because I was working on the HBO show about the Blackjack guys, I read all his books, and he's a terrible, terrible writer.
the Kevin Spacey movie, for people who don't know what we're talking about.
Book, he just has a Facebook book out where the Entertainment Weekly Review said that you can't believe a journalist uses the words, one could imagine the following happened.
Well, that's not good. Wow, that's like when
it... Well, he did it in the Blackjack book, too, and I'm like, am I nuts? Is that the worst thing you could write? Did you research this or not?
Yeah. No, that's like when Edwin Morris did the Reagan biography and put himself in the biography in 1914 with Reagan.
Hey, listen, he got his Blackjack movie made. My TV show is sitting in the garbage can somewhere. Anyway. So this Facebook...
Sorkin movie.
Yeah. Aaron Sorkin in his full powers of West Wing coolness, writing how these kids put together a Facebook and all the fallout and damage, and it was great.
That reminds me of that wonderful television movie with Noah Wiley and...
yeah, no, it's better than that.
Well, you know, I like Pirates of Silicon Valley. I'm serious. I know it's a TV movie, but I think... Well, now you see, I guess I've diminished my recommendation about the Three Stooges movie now that I made to you the other day. I honestly like Pirates of Silicon Valley. I thought it was very fun. But I'm sure Sorkin is a little more weighty than that. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, a little better.
You think?
I didn't mean to laugh in your face.
No, that was... I
just actually pointed at you and laughed. And
part of the comedy, kid. Don't kid yourself. That's quite all right. Let's move on.
Yeah, why do you think Bruno... Why do you think the press is beating the shit out of it so much?
I have no idea because...
I'm fascinated by why Entertainment Weekly... dedicated half a page to talk about a failure it was, even though it was the number one movie at the box office.
Exactly.
It made all its money back in 5 days.
Yep.
And meanwhile, like, Public Enemies is never going to make its money back. You know, it's very yeah. interesting. I found it interesting that, like, Bruno, Borat was all anti-Semitic jokes. And,
yes,
that
so
was okay, and that's funny, but sex is not funny, boy. Some people just cannot laugh at sex, and it's just crazy.
Well, you know, I'm halfway through Mel Brooks's biography, and he got the same kind of shit for Blazing Saddles, and a lot of respected critics just didn't get it. And
yeah.
meanwhile, the audiences did, and luckily that saved his film career. So after
it's
the 12 Chairs, definitely.
Interesting that when I you can feel like someone's being gunned at, you know?
Oh, definitely. Well,
yeah.
yeah.
Very interesting. And then there's nothing to gun for. I mean, like, Land of Lost tanked huge. Where's the article about that? No,
thankfully.
Bruno's going to get dug in, you know?
Yeah. Oh, no,
so
and I think...
You're thankful that Land of Lost tanked?
Quite frankly, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I hate to quote Adam Carolla, but he's right. It was a shit TV show. Why would you think it would be a good movie? And I got to be honest, getting a little tired of Will Ferrell doing the same goddamn thing every summer. Enough. There you go. Yeah. Well, I'm sure that'll get back to Will. Yeah, cancel Word Balloon, will you?
Yeah, that's it.
Fuck that guy. Homer Gator. That time again, huh? All right. My question for both of you, what is your favorite surprise reveal that you've read in comics? For instance, Zorn is really Magneto, Elektra is a Skrull, etc.
I liked Elektra as a Skrull. That was good.
Yeah, I'm sure you did.
Yeah,
I'm thinking too.
I'll tell you, the one time I actually was so shocked that I threw a comic book across the room was, I forget, I think it's Black Kiss number 4. When the
Howard Chicken.
Chick had a dick.
Yeah, that was creepy.
I was really young, and I never seen anything like that. I didn't even know that existed. So that scared the shit out of me. Now, no big deal.
Every day.
Another chick with a dick. What are you going to
yeah,
do?
Yeah, there you go. Training.
But, at the time, I got to tell you, that I did go, what, but the who, and threw it across the room.
No, I remember being a little disturbed. And I know Fraction has talked about American Flag disturbing him as well with the swastikas over boobs and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think Howard's disturbed us all in our childhood.
Hey, Matt, get on the phone.
Has he got one?
It's swastika boob talk. Yeah, he's got.
Hello, what are we talking about?
So tell him the question.
They asked for... what is your favorite surprise reveal you've ever read in comics? And Brian just mentioned Black Kiss with the chick having a dick, and that immediately made me think of your encounters with Chaykin.
Oh, yeah. Oh, when Chaykin revealed that he was a chick with a dick to me, yeah.
Not an attractive woman.
Yeah, no, he's a very ugly woman.
Hey, pal, how you doing?
Hey, guy.
Yeah.
favorite reveals in comics.
Oh, I was thinking of your American Flag stuff about seeing boobies, even though there were swastikas on them or whatever.
Yeah, the whole that he goes ahead and sleeps with the Nazi, and then later's like, God, I hate myself. like, wait a minute,
And I was worried because now Matt can't even
get
an erection without
exactly.
Swastikas.
Now I have to actually physically be strangling somebody with a Nazi flag to even become aroused or feel anything like human contact.
He doesn't have an answer.
I'm thinking what you guys keep
vamping until you come up with something.
I'm vamping so I can.
I don't know if this is
chicks with dicks in my head.
This isn't a surprise, and forgive the DC reference in a Marvel conversation, but really, Blackest Night, I really enjoyed, even though I knew it was coming.
I haven't read it yet. Don't.
Okay, it was fun seeing the characters interact, and I will leave it at that. Then
To the Stars. What is the classic EC story that sort of feels a lot like a Twilight Zone? It was a controversial day. The astronaut at the end takes the helmet off and reveals that he's a black man.
Sure. I don't know the title, but I know exactly what you're talking
about. I want to say it was To the Stars, but all of my EC books are in boxes now. That's sort of the EC ones were sort of masters. Like all those the EC stories were.
Yeah, really.
Terrific.
All those, like, kind of O. Henry's endings to all the Tales of the Crypt stuff, yeah.
Reveals and all that stuff.
Well, you know, I've got one, the Thunderbolts revealing themselves to be the Masters of Evil back in the day. When it was Zemo and all those guys. I thought that was an interesting surprise. Was that Busick?
Yeah.
There you go.
Well,
that book couldn't exist today with the internet. That book like that, I don't think could.
Surprises obviously have their issues with the internet, as I'm sure you gentlemen are familiar.
Who does?
Just surprises in any surprises
no,
in stories.
No, I mean we talked about that with the Elektra Skrull thing. To pull that off, we literally had to tell four people.
because it would leak, and things leaked before, and you know, Hawkeye, Echo as Ronin leaked online.
Yep.
Through a Avengers, you know, encyclopedia book, and
yes,
things leak, you know. So they're impossible, and we talked about, I mean, the biggest shock I ever had in mainstream comics was when Electro got killed. That shocked the shit out of me. And to try to give that feeling to people today is maddening. It's worth it, and I've done it a couple times, but it is, you know, not to that level, but you know what I mean. It's, you know, like, ha-ha, I gotcha. It's a shocker. You know what I mean? It's hard to do, but I do remember reading that and shit in my pants.
You just reminded me of another one, and I just talked to Jerry Conway about it, and I was 9 years old when he killed Gwen Stacy, and
right,
man, that blew my mind. That crack. I'm 44.
I was 44 years old when Gwen Stacy died. Right.
And now being 97, I can look back fondly.
That's about the first sense of every hate letter I've ever gotten, by the way.
Yeah, I don't know if it's possible to do, I mean, big level. I mean, like Brian said, four people knew about the Electro. When I came in during Civil War, there were things that they could tell me about, things that they couldn't tell me about.
That's because the people leak. And
yeah,
I
remember I had been at the company. Like, I got the War Journal gig 3 or 4 days, and something leaked. I don't remember what, but I got, like, a phone call at, like, 9 in the morning. Because I was brand new. It was one of those things where, like, they knew, like, you know, well, there are 4 new kids, so let's talk to them and see if anybody's talked to anybody.
The best part of my job now is that when shit like that happens, they know it's not me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have to be asked.
Yeah, I don't get those calls.
Because I remember, like, years ago, like 2001, 2002, something really bad leaked, and you get that call, and you do feel like you've done something wrong, and you're thinking, did my wife tell a hairdresser or something? You know, you're like, you know, but you know,
I
listen, was, God bless, we live in a world where there's twisted British bloggers looking for things to type, and he's doing the public good. He's doing, you know, he's doing God's work. Leaking shit.
It was one of those things. I told a friend of my dad something the other day, and it just, as we were working on pouring concrete, you know, like tearing up old sidewalk, and it came up, like, what are you up to now, and where are you going, and something that isn't even close to being announced, it's like, oh, and this is going to happen later, da, da, da. And then it was one of those things where I had to say, now, you
Dad,
can't mention this to your buddy's cousin, sister's friend, who, like,
but then what happens,
the kid's going to, you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Yeah, but what happens is they look at you like, oh, is that worth something?
Hello, Entertainment
they
Tonight.
They weren't going to say anything until you said something.
Yeah, right, yeah. I like that one time that it turned out that the Green Goblin wasn't dead. That was a shocker.
He's not dead.
Excellent. There we go. He flies off in the night.
Yeah, he had nothing.
No, that was good.
Now he has to sit here in shame.
Way to go, Matt.
He had nothing.
Page 2.
All right, let's do a couple more, and then I gotta go.
Okay. No, we've had a quality jaunt.
I actually have a big Thor movie meeting tomorrow, and I have to finish. I have to 40 more pages of script to read.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's cool. Svedi from Fairfield, Pennsylvania. Thank you, Mr. Bendis and Mr. Sanchez, for doing these. I really enjoy listening to them on my way to work. Thank you, Svedi. You're not alone. In the upcoming ongoing, will we see any old friends of Jessica Drew's from her early days of Spider-Woman? Such as Jerry Hunt?
You just thought of one?
That's the one that Svedi is specifying, actually.
Matt's got one. Hold on.
Go ahead.
I recently in Morrison's Batman run.
Yes.
Get off the phone. that he pulled the Zur-En-Arr thing together. Like, I it was so well done. I thought that was terrific, and it was genuinely moved that he tied it all together. That it wasn't just like a nonsense phrase, that it had a kind of a connective thread into everything, and that last page of Batman R.I.P. really was a great reveal for Brian's giving me this.
I just like how you're getting smaller and smaller as you're explaining yourself, Matt. Go ahead.
Say it again?
No, you were decreasing in size as you were justifying
you
that.
You sound like the computer in 2001 as he's pulling out all the
Daisy. I'm afraid.
I'm sorry. This should never see the light of day. I'm gonna hang up and not, I'm gonna get back on the phone.
It's all in, pal. Like, I love that. I like watching Matt self-destruct. That was fun. All right, we're moving on. Jerry Hunt is covered, Svady. Don't worry. Will we get to see Wonder Man again in the pages of your adventure books anytime soon?
Yes.
Thanks again for taking
that seed is planted. You can go back and look. I think issue 50 or 51.
Always happy to see Simon back.
Planted. And he's also showing up in this Dark Reign Lethal Legion, which I haven't read. I don't have anything to do with it. But
Is that Frank Thierry's book?
Frank fucking Thierry. Yeah.
Is that how he talks?
What?
I haven't had the pleasure yet. Is that how
Frank Thierry. Hey, I told that fucking Punisher to kick that fucking Spider-Man's ass, those fucking douchebag. That is exactly how he talks.
I like him already.
He was at the New York Con, and he was swearing like a Marine. And
I'm surprised I missed him.
A mother took a kid and ran out of the out of the panel. The whole place burst out laughing, and of course he goes, hey, lady, something I said. Does it. And only with that voice can you get away with that material.
That's awesome. He's like Jimmy Breslin.
You know how like Stan Lee, there's came up a little, you know, I'd be bashful Brian Bendis, and you know.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It'd be fucking Frank Thierry.
Jesse, John Romita, and Frank fucking Thierry.
Frank
Thierry. Yorick Brown, thanks for doing this. Brian, Powers is my favorite. Okay, we've just done this, Yorick. You've already gotten your timeline for Powers releases.
Yes. A lot of people have been asking me on Twitter and everything, too. And I feel
sure.
I'm not getting the word out enough. November. It's done. In the can.
Oh, and now here's something Matt could probably chime in on. What music are you listening to these days? Anything knocking your socks off?
What music am I and Matt Fraction listening to these days? I loved Regina Spektor's album, Far. Absolutely loved it.
Cool.
I can't recommend it high enough. I listened to it maybe 7 times, and for a father of 2, that is a major commitment.
Very
Matt
cool.
Fraction, what are you listening to?
The new Future Left record is really good. Pendulum is really good. I listened to a lot of Prince again lately.
Because Prince is on the cover of Spin magazine, and he does.
No, I was never a Michael Jackson fan.
No, I was.
Retaliation of Michael dying,
I got my ass kicked in Chicago, like for not being a Michael Jackson fan.
I was in
second grade. Like I don't get it. I'm not, and I got my ass.
But what was weird, it was in 1998.
Yes, it was right.
Oh,
it was
excellent.
Dangerous Michael Jackson. But when he died,
I
went on Twitter, like, hey, let's all go listen to Purple Rain. It's just a better album. So I still maintain it's a better album.
Oh, God.
13th Floor Elevators, yeah. That's always,
hey, I saw there's a new MGMT album coming out. Is that a new album?
Really?
I saw a new release for next week. Is that a new album?
Really? I don't know.
I don't either.
Because Matt turned me on to MGMT.
There's apparently a double disc Flaming Lips record and a new Beastie Boys disc coming out at the end of the summer, beginning of fall.
Very excited.
So,
cool.
Middle-aged white rapping. Much you want.
They got more gray hair than I do, absolutely.
Yeah,
on my balls. Yeah. All right.
They were on what's that idiot show?
Jimmy Fallon
show.
That is an idiot show.
They
go on.
They were great.
Well, that's
good for
Jimmy Fallon for having something entertaining on his show. Go on.
They were great. I mean, they're a terrible interview.
Oh.
They're the worst interview.
He sucks ass.
He has the Roots, and the Roots is maybe the best band in the world. And if you want to hear a great Roots album,
yes,
Jay-Z Unplugged. Jay-Z did an Unplugged album with the Roots as his band. It's great.
Wow.
Really? You never heard it?
No.
I have it here. You'll learn it.
Cool.
It is
terrific.
Great.
Wow.
It's like not, you don't have to listen to Jimmy Fallon. It's just.
All right, I definitely feel old in this conversation, but I will move on.
Yeah, you have Tommy Dorsey.
Yeah, I was going to say, exactly. Now I'm enjoying Neil Diamond's Solitary Man, actually.
Yeah, and Henry Mancini, Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Absolutely. Nice.
I started to go through a bunch of RJD2 stuff, too. I went back with Mad Men about the startup again,
mm-hmm.
and they did the opening music for Mad Men as an RJD2 song. I think it's RJD2 anyway, but that's what I've been listening to. So I'm not watching. I'm going to end up having been wrong at somebody else. But
all right,
that's all I got. That's it.
All right, let's wrap it up with that.
Fair enough.
Goodbye.
There we go. We appreciate the cameo from young Matt Fraction.
I wish it was.
It was an extended cameo.
I wish it was better.
No, again, man, watching you shrink like Ray Palmer was a pleasure.
Well,
I really like that part at the end when, you know. And
wow.
Good luck with the move.
Hey, where's Casanova?
Good question.
I have a really cool email. So Casanova's coming soon.
Casanova's coming to an email near you.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to email it to all the readers one at a time.
Outstanding.
I don't know. I'll be seeing the Twins in San Diego, so we're going to talk schedule.
Oh, that's great, man. Excellent. Yeah, I hope I hope we have more information on that when we do a full-fledged conversation.
Yeah.
And
When's Tony Stark going to get his shit back?
No, never. Have you read it? It's grimmer and grimmer.
Indeed. Yeah. No, it's a
lot
of fun, and we'll talk about
Black
that at
Lantern
the end.
Now. Sorry, kids.
There you go. And Brian, we'll pick up this conversation in 6 months or so. No, we're a couple.
Oh, no, we're not done yet, right?
We're at question 43, sir.
Really? Jesus Christ.
Exactly. The cameo was appreciated, but yeah, that kind of, you know. But again, Matt, everyone always asks to hear jam sessions with cameos, so this was great.
And you never know what you're going to get.
Thanks for playing, boys. Have a good night, and we'll talk soon.
God bless you,
bye,
sir.
Bye, John.
And that'll do it for part three of this edition of the Bendis Tapes. More on the way from Word Balloon. Enjoy yourselves at the San Diego Comic-Con. Make sure you go see Matt Fraction out there. And all our guests this week, both audio and video. We've got audio conversations from Hilary Barta, an audio and video conversation with Dave McKean. And I just added Robert Atkins, the fine G.I. Joe artist and also a Marvel artist who's been doing work on Amazing Spider-Man and Ultimate Fantastic Four. He's going to San Diego Comic-Con. You can say hi to all those guys and listen to their interviews on your trip to San Diego. I hope you enjoy them. We got a few more pre-San Diego surprises coming before things really heat up at Comic-Con, so keep your eyes and ears open. More files to be shared here on Word Balloon. Thanks again for listening. John Sutras reminding you that Word Balloon is all over the Internet at our homepage, wordballoon.com. You can find us also at Newsarama. We're at iTunes. Make sure you subscribe to our RSS feed. And check out our archive at wordballoon.com, where you'll find well over 200 other interviews with comic creators, television people, film people, really interesting stuff going back to 2005. All those interviews waiting for you at wordballoon.com. Questions or comments about the show, reach me via email, john@wordballoon.com. You can come to the Word Balloon message board. Click on the link at wordballoon.com. It's hosted by Jinx World. Also, you can reach me through Twitter, John Word Balloon, and, of course, my Facebook page as well. Until next time, thanks for listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2009.